This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
In the long run, the last 7 days in the life of Facebook probably won't matter all that much, unless you were one of the losers in that fumbled IPO. And then, where do you go to get your money back? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is the Marketplace Podcast for Friday, the 25th of May. Good to have you with us. So Facebook is a week old today as a publicly held company, and still not many celebrations, near as I could tell. Investors are leery. Shares were off another 3.5% or so percent today. Lawsuits and subpoenas over the botched IPO are in the air. Big banks lost tens of millions of dollars in the confusion last Friday. And retail investors are out too. Trades they thought had gone through didn't. Buying and, more to the point, selling as the price fell. And they want somebody to do something about it. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek-Smith has that story from New York.
Virginia resident Rajesh Guti was so excited to buy stock in Facebook, he was at his computer when the markets opened and snapped up shares of the social network.
Probably within the first hour of opening.
Guti did experience minor delays.
I had some difficulty. I think the transaction delay was 5 minutes more than usual.
Guti says he bought Facebook at $39 a share. Because of technical problems that affected the trading of around 30 million shares, many small investors who meant to buy Facebook at that price ended up paying $42 or more for a stock that ended this week at $32 a share.
That was a catastrophe.
Stephen Lieb is a money manager in New York. He says the Facebook flop also shows the disadvantage small investors have. Many big institutions had information that convinced them the stock was overpriced. Your average small investor didn't know.
That person had no idea that Wall Street was changing their opinion on Facebook.
Investors have started filing lawsuits. Some mutual fund managers are asking for compensation from NASDAQ for customer losses. And Morgan Stanley, which took Facebook public, will reportedly reimburse customers for some losses. Still, the damage is done, says Scott Kessler, an analyst at S&P Capital IQ.
A lot of folks had perceived this IPO as being the offering that was really going to usher in a new period of more active investor interest.
So far, Virginia investor Rajesh Guti is holding on to his stock. He says in spite of a rocky first week, he still thinks Facebook is a good bet. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith for Marketplace.
Facebook is where we'll start our recap of the 5 days gone by. Here for our weekly wrap of Wall Street and Beyond are Lee Gallagher from Fortune Magazine, also Cardiff Garcia from the blog FT Alphaville. Hey, guys.
Hi, Kai.
Hey, Kai.
So, Lee, let me ask you this. Facebook, everything was terrible, blah, blah, blah. We all know. Anything going to change?
Well, I mean, anything going to change with the stock price? Yeah, I mean,
not the stock price. The IPO that went so horribly wrong.
What we've learned, once again, is that there's a lot of gray areas. I feel like we keep learning this lesson, and I'm fittingly wearing a gray shirt today. I mean,
and it's gray here in Los Angeles. So, you know.
But, you know, this is really, really terrible. I mean, the IPO was so bungled. It was terrible on a number of levels. So many lessons learned. You know, I think probably the biggest issue was the disclosure that looks like it went to a few analysts who cut their estimates and didn't go to everybody, which was a big deal in this case because it had such an unusually high number of retail investors. Everyday individuals wanted on this stock for an obvious reason. We all know Facebook. It's like the old Peter Lynch, buy what you know. This is like right in front of your face.
So Cardiff, is the lesson that retail investors ought just not be involved in IPOs?
That might be a sort of medium-term lesson. I mean, and that's really the tragic thing about all this, which is that this falls into a longer-term secular pattern of fewer and fewer initial public offerings. It's been going on for more than a decade. Huh. I mean, already investors, and especially smaller investors, were already worried about this stuff. The whole thing seems rigged. It seems like Wall Street has the in, right. And this only confirms it. So if anything's going to come of it, I don't know that it's going to come from these lawsuits, but it might prompt some people to look about the entire process and the ways that it's flawed.
All right, let's move on to something a little cheerier, if we could. Europe, Lee. So as I walked into the studio just now, the lead story in the New York Times was a Spanish bank asking for 19 billion euros in a bailout. We had a downgrade of Norwegian banks this morning, for heaven's sake. What in Sam Hill is going on around here?
Well, the situation in Spain has been deteriorating, even as all the attention has been on Greece. But the big, big fear is just contagion whenever whatever happens with Greece actually happens, which, you know, for now, it's sort of a simmering cauldron of instability until the elections.
Would you not say, Lee, that what we have now today with Spanish banks asking for 19 billion and Norwegian banks being and Swedish banks being downgraded, is that not contagion?
That is contagion. That was a little surprising, I think. So it'll be interesting to see how the markets react, on Monday or on Tuesday, I guess.
Well, markets in Europe are open, Cardiff, right, on Monday?
But here's the thing with what's happening in Spain, I think. This is also part of the problem with weak economic growth there. And you've heard the phrase that when the tide comes in, you find out who's naked. That's what happens in a recession. What we're finding out more and more is confirmation that Europe is already in a recession. And so what's happening with the Spanish bank Bankia is that all along it was in worse shape than we thought in real estate losses and things like that. And it's impossible to cover that up. When the economy gets worse and worse. And unfortunately, it doesn't look like there's any end to that right now.
You're not making me feel better.
No, I'm sorry. Well, it is a long weekend, and here comes Memorial Day.
Yeah, but so. I'm going to be stuck in traffic going to the mountains.
So
Lee, let me ask you this, though. Is it possible, and boy, I haven't asked this question in probably a couple of years, is it possible that the financial crisis we had here in this country and then in Europe as well was completely wasted and that we have learned no lessons from any of this stuff? Your role in J.P. Morgan and your role in Facebook in Europe and the whole smash.
I think I think there's definitely a case to be made for that. I think the J.P. Morgan situation alone just proves that proprietary trading is the gift that keeps on giving.
Right,
Everything that went wrong is just can still go wrong. I mean that could happen again tomorrow at another bank. I mean that's just we have not fixed that in the least, and nor does it seem has anybody learned the lessons about risk and taking risk. In Europe, I think it's a little bit different. I'm not sure that's totally analogous. In a way, I mean, Germany's kind of saying we're not going to let too big to fail happen. I mean, or we're going to let them fail. So it's a little bit different, but the issues are the same.
Yeah. Cardiff, quickly on the way out, do you actually believe that Greece is going to leave the euro and it's all going to come kerflooey over there?
I think the likelihood that it stays in is higher than the likelihood that it goes out, but it's like 51-49 right now, and that's as best as I can do.
Cardiff Garcia from the blog FT Alphaville, Lee Gallagher from Fortune Magazine. Thanks, you guys. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Kai.
Stocks today on Wall Street? Yeah, not so good. Not terrible, but not so good. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. There are all kinds of stories out there about CEOs working for a dollar a year. A dollar in actual salary, that is. They do still get their more lucrative stocks and options as well. Apple CEO Tim Cook has now raised those stakes, though, and taken the compensation give-back game into record territory. He has turned down a $75 million stock dividend, as Marketplace's Adrian Hill reports.
Apple's products are at the very least expensive and good to look at. The same could be said for the $75 million gesture by Apple CEO Tim Cook.
To tell everybody, look, we're a good company. We're not trying to be greedy here. Our CEO is not trying to be greedy.
Camelia Kunin is a professor at Northwestern's Kellogg School of Management.
One can speculate that maybe this was, yes, a little bit of a PR move.
Oh, I think it's a very smart call.
Charles Elson heads the Center for Corporate Governance at the University of Delaware. He says refusing the dividend helps Cook keep a low profile at a time when the public is fed up with CEO salaries.
CEO pay is at the heart of the political debate. It's the heart of the financial debate. And less is better today.
Also,
by foregoing this, I think he's buying, I wouldn't necessarily say shareholder support, but a shareholder neutrality.
And really, does a guy like Tim Cook, with hundreds of millions in Apple stock and a seven-figure salary, really need another $75 million? David Larker heads the Corporate Governance Research Program at Stanford.
Maybe the case that, you know, he looks at this and says, you know, I was given a bunch of stock grants of 300-odd million, and, you know, that's enough.
Yeah, I think that'd be enough for me, too. I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
You know how everybody's worried about Greece and Europe, as we were talking about in the wrap, and how the economy over there is going to hit us here? Well, might I humbly suggest we keep on going right around to the other side of the globe. From Beijing, China today came news of a seventh straight month of a manufacturing slowdown. That's in a manufacturing economy, mind you, not a good thing. From Shanghai, Marketplace's Rob Schmitz reports.
Up to now, China's economic miracle has been fueled in large part by what's called investment-led growth. In other words, building stuff. Building infrastructure has made it easy for local bureaucrats to meet their GDP growth targets year after year. But the result has been a lot of wasteful spending. The question for Tsinghua University's Patrick Shovanek is, could China use this slowdown to change its economic formula?
Will they simply step on the gas and try to pour more fuel on the fire and boost investment in order to hit GDP targets? Or will they accept that China's economy actually needs to slow and take advantage of that to reorient the direction of economic growth?
Chinese Premier Wen Jiabao had the answer this week. Build more stuff. China will embark on even more investment-led growth to keep its GDP moving at its normal bullet train pace. Peking University economist Michael Pettis says bad idea.
It's the typical short-term versus long-term trade-off. In the short term, by pumping up investment, you can increase growth or reduce the rate at which the economy is slowing down, but you do so at the expense of worsening the imbalances and increasing debt.
If there's any good news here, it's this. The U.S. economy is somewhat protected from a China slowdown because it hasn't played a big role in feeding China's investment boom. Countries like Australia and South Africa might be in trouble, though, as they're starting to see a slowdown in Chinese orders for iron ore and copper, a slowdown that most economists say won't end anytime soon. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
The sporting news this week has little to do with actual sports. It's more along the lines of what can happen when sports and politics and a bad economy meet in a dark alley. Former Red Sox star Curt Schilling started a video game company in Rhode Island 2 years ago. It employed about 300 people. And notice I said employed in the past tense because 38 Studios, the company that Schilling founded, laid everybody off yesterday, leaving the people of Rhode Island potentially on the hook for $75 million in loan guarantees that Schilling had gotten. Ted Nisi is a reporter for WPRI Television in Providence, Rhode Island. Ted, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So Curt Schilling, longtime baseball player, member of the Red Sox, the world champion Red Sox, I should say, and also a longtime gamer, retires and decides to start up a video game company. And now here we are. What happened?
Yeah, you know, Curt had tried for a number of years to get private investors. He went to Wall Street, he went in Boston, and the venture capitalists just weren't biting. So he wound up talking to our former Republican governor in Rhode Island at a fundraiser, and he said, hey, why don't you come down to Rhode Island? The lawmakers here passed a huge new loan program and gave $75 million out of the loan guarantees directly to Schilling, and he brought his company down here, and now it appears that it's collapsed less than 2 years later.
Yeah, and it collapsed in a big hurry. I mean, this is, you know, less than 2 weeks ago we started hearing stories this company, 38 Studios, is in trouble. What exactly happened?
On some level, I don't think we know yet. We've asked the governor at his press conferences, how does a company so rapidly go from seemingly being healthy to completely out of cash, defaulting on a loan payment, unable to make payroll? The company released its first game a couple months ago, and while it sold decently, it clearly didn't sell nearly enough to get the cash flow going that they needed. We've now been told they were more than 13 months away from putting out their big game. Hmm. That was due out now next June. And if the company was already out of cash now and was spending $4 million a month, right, it's very hard to see how they were going to fund themselves until the game came out.
Right. The sad irony of this whole thing, of the $75 million, in addition to the people who've lost their jobs, is that there are a few states hit harder by this recession than Rhode Island. I mean, unemployment there is 11+%. There are cities in bankruptcy.
It's absolutely true. We've had double-digit unemployment since 2009. Our capital is on the brink of bankruptcy. The state's just never really found a new economy since its manufacturing sort of base fell apart in the 70s and 80s. This 38 Studios, that's the name of the game company, it was sort of a bid by Rhode Island to try to reinvent itself by just making a huge splash, and now it's sort of blown up in the state's face. And on top of that, taxpayers owe maybe up to $90 million to pay off the bonds.
Wow. We should say that Schilling himself does not come out of this with much money in his pocket, right? He put 30-something million of his own into it.
Yeah, Schilling has been, you know, Schilling, when he was a Red Sox player here in New England, we couldn't keep him off the radio and TV. Now we're not hearing a word from him now, except occasionally on Facebook. But he's said in the past he's sunk more than $30 million of his own money into the company. I have to think that he's tapped out, because if he couldn't write, the check they defaulted on that set off this crisis was only $1 million. And for a ball player who made, you know, $114 million during his career, you'd think to save his own company, he would have put it in. So I'm thinking he might be tapped out at this point.
Yeah. This is playing out now in Rhode Island politics as well. I mean, members of the Economic Development Corporation are resigning. The new governor, Lincoln Chafee, is involved.
That's right. I think we're going to see a lot of fallout for quite a while here in Rhode Island related to this.
Ted Nesi at WPRI 12 and WPRI.com in Providence, Rhode Island. Ted, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me, Kai.
Coming up,
I basically developed a paper sensor that can detect pancreatic cancer, ovarian cancer, and lung cancer for as little as 3 cents in 5 minutes.
And he's not even old enough to drive. The winner of the Intel Science Fair straight ahead. But first, let's do the numbers. Well, the Dow Industrials dropped 0.6% this Friday, 74 points, 12,454 the number. The NASDAQ flat, shaved off just a point, ended at 2837. The S&P 500 down 0.2%. That's about 2 points, 1317 at the bell. For the week, the first good one in the last four, by the by. The Dow up 0.7%. The NASDAQ added 2.1%. The S&P 500 moved up 0.7%. Today's losses were across most categories. JPMorgan Chase lost almost 1.33%. Citigroup let go of 0.7%. Chevron spilled almost 2%. Caterpillar fell 1.5%. Boeing cut back almost 2% today. Bonds rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 1.74%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Monday. U.S. markets are closed and Congress is out to observe Memorial Day. President Obama will lay a wreath at Arlington National Cemetery to honor American troops killed in battle. And in D.C., Defense Secretary Leon Panetta hosts a ceremony at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. I'm Gina Delvac.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdal. The Memorial Day weekend is a time for many things. Parades, cookouts, movie openings, the beach, if it's warm enough. Also, the latest in a new trend of holiday-themed campaign ads. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer explains.
Presidential campaigns used to officially kick off around September with a few Labor Day ads. But those days ended with the 2004 presidential election, when commercials started in March. Now every holiday is campaign material, even Mother's Day.
Ann Romney raised 5 boys.
That ad for Governor Romney started airing on May 9th, and President Obama just released this commercial for Memorial Day.
The sacrifices that our troops have made have been incredible.
Ken Goldstein tracks political ads as president of Cantor Media CMAG. He says both campaigns targeted certain voters with their holiday ads. Romney was appealing to women. President Obama reached out to white men.
white working class men is a particular segment of the population that has a high degree of respect for the military. You have Memorial Day, so you peg a creative to that.
But is this an effective strategy? Erica Franklin Fowler says yes. She heads Wesleyan University's media project, and she says holiday ads can even reach precious swing voters.
They're not looking for mass persuasion here.
She says the holiday parade of persuasion will continue. Just wait for the 4th of July fireworks, and then there's Halloween. Alex Vogel is a Republican strategist. He loves making Halloween ads.
The one that is most memorable did involve a candidate superimposed with a witch costume.
Voters have a lot to look forward to. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
The high school science fair. For most of us, it was no more than your average baking soda volcano. But for the big one, the Intel International Science and Engineering Fair, the competition is fierce and the prizes are big. $75,000 in scholarship money to the winner and about $12,000 in cash. The grand prize this year went to Jack Andreka. He's a high school freshman from Crownsville, Maryland, and it's only a little tiny bit of a stretch to say he's trying to cure cancer by finding it early. Hey, Jack, how are you?
Great. How about you?
I'm all right, thanks. So listen, tell me about this project. It's cancer detection sort of on the cheap, right? Not real expensive.
Yeah, I basically developed a paper sensor that can detect pancreatic cancer, ovarian cancer, and lung cancer before they become invasive for as little as 3 cents in 5 minutes.
Okay, no, seriously, how'd you do this? Because really the best minds we have been working on this for, you know, decades.
So basically, there are these antibodies which capture a specific protein that's found in your blood because it becomes elevated when you have those cancers. And so then when you have blood that has those elevated levels, it will change the conductivity of my paper sensor. And basically, I was just measuring that and it can detect pancreatic cancer.
Oh, my God. I understood nothing of what you just said. I have to tell you that because I didn't do really well in science in school. How is this better than what we have now, though?
So actually, the current gold standard for protein detection in your blood, it's called ELISA. My test is 168 times faster, over 26,000 times less expensive, and over 400 times more sensitive. Also, it's more accurate. It's nearly 100% accurate in its diagnosis. And then also, it's portable and doesn't require specialized training.
That's kind of amazing. I mean, seriously, don't you think?
Yeah, it was pretty cool to see that my sensor defeated the better one.
Now, have biotechnology firms come a-knocking yet? I mean, they must have.
Yeah, actually, I did file a patent for this. And right now, me and the Johns Hopkins University team of lawyers, of patent lawyers, they're helping me straighten out a bit of kinks in my patent.
Yeah.
And also, we've already been contacted by two biotechnology firms, one in San Diego called Audit Micro and one called Biorad. Pretty exciting.
Yeah, I bet. Now, what are you going to do like when you're a sophomore in high school, man? Because if ninth grade, is this good for you?
Well, I'm going to try and go to Intel ISEF. That's the science fair I just won again.
Yeah.
But I just really love doing science. And then also I'm trying to start a business with this.
Oh, well, see, there you go. Right now, how's that going?
So actually, I'm right now working on another project, but I'm keeping that a bit under wraps.
Have you always been a science kid?
Yes. Ever since age 3. My parents really fostered my curiosity. They had us look up stuff. They didn't just tell us. They had us find out stuff, do experiments, stuff like that. Because I have an older brother. He's 2 years older than me. And so we would just do these amazing scientific experiments. And right now, he has taken over the basement with his chemistry experiments.
So he'll win next year, right?
He went for the past 2 years, and he didn't go this year, though.
So you're the head science kid in the family.
You could say that.
There you go. Come on. Own it, man. You got to own it, right? Jack Andreka. He just won the International Science and Engineering Fair. It's the Intel ISAF, as he said. Jack, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note of a Friday afternoon, a chance to get away from the big news and talk about what didn't quite make the headlines. It comes to us courtesy of Rico Galliano, Brendan Francis Noonan, and the rest of the Marketplace staff.
Stacey Vanek-Smith, senior reporter. What story are you going to be talking about this weekend?
Well, Brendan, it turns out that Facebook can predict the stock market.
Really? Because I don't think people are really happy with Facebook stock at the moment.
Well, okay, not their stock. But what they did was they formed this index of gross national happiness by kind of aggregating people's status updates to see if they're happy or sad. And a graduate student in Germany compared them against the stock market. And it turned out that if status updates were very happy, the stock market had a much better chance of going up.
So now if your boss sees you on Facebook, you can just say, I'm driving our stock.
Yeah, I'm doing it for the economy.
Shireen Marisol Meraji, Wealth and Poverty Reporter. What story are you going to be talking about this weekend?
Well, according to a new study, traffic in America is down.
That was not what I expected you to say. It's gone down?
This company that studies traffic looked at traffic congestion and found that 70 metropolitan areas out of 100 actually have less traffic now. They think it's because of high gas prices.
I have to say that as a Los Angelino sitting in traffic all day, this report seems like a lie.
Well, maybe you're driving on the 405 freeway because the same company is saying that's the worst traffic corridor in the nation.
Oh, so what's happening is all the drivers are leaving these other metropolitan areas and just driving the 405 all day.
Up and down, all day long.
Cy Hirschitz, reporter. What's your story?
So this law student from Canada paid off his student loans in cash.
Wow, how much were his student loans?
$114,000. He had to carry it in two duffel bags. But when he got to the bank, they didn't know what to do with the money.
Because it's such an old school notion.
Right. Paying off with cash? Who does that anymore?
No, I mean the idea of paying off your loans.
Oh, right.
The radio show that Rico and Brendan do is called The Dinner Party. There's a link to the podcast on our website. It is, repeat after me, marketplace.org. All right, we got to go. That's Marketplace from APM American Public Media. Today, the Dow dropped 0.6%, 74 points. The NASDAQ basically flat down, just a point. The S&P 500 off 0.2%, 2 points. Good week, though. So, you know, there's that. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's acting producer is Megan Larson. The executive producer of the broadcast is Deborah Clark. JJ Yore is the vice president and general manager. Coming up this weekend on our personal finance show, Marketplace Money, military force and financial literacy.
If you are financially stable, that means that, okay, that aspect of your life is squared away. There's less things detracting you from your mission in the squadron.
Money goes to the Marines. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We're back on Monday. Have yourselves a great weekend. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.